From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Here's your afternoon news. The jury in a Fairbanks cold case murder trial found defendant Stephen Downs guilty of both sexual assault in the first degree and murder in the first degree. To protect the identity of the jurors, Fairbanks Superior Court Judge Thomas Temple read the verdicts aloud.
Murder in the first degree of SS. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree of SS, dated at Fairbanks, Alaska, the 10th day of February, 2022, sexual assault in the first degree of SS. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of sexual assault in the first degree of SS, dated at Fairbanks, Alaska, this 9th day of February, 2022, signed by the jury foreperson.
Thomas then polled the jurors individually to make sure the verdicts were unanimous. Stephen Downs was an 18-year-old first-year student at University of Alaska Fairbanks in 1993 and presumably had no connection to the victim, Sophie Sergey. Sergey had been a marine biology student at the university but had taken a semester off to work and save money. She was visiting Fairbanks the weekend of April 25th for an oral orthodontist appointment. She stayed in a friend's room on one of the women's floors at a university dormitory but left after midnight Sunday to have a cigarette. She was found in a restroom down the hall. Downs lived one floor above. He was never suspected of the crime until 2018, when DNA collected from the crime scene was partially matched to a profile in commercial genealogy database. That profile was Downs' aunt. Alaska State Troopers traced the genealogy to a Downs who was living in the dorm at the time of the crime. Alexei Sergey, the victim's older brother, listened to the verdict remotely from St. Mary's, Alaska. The judge scheduled sentencing for September 26th and 27th. Ketchikan School District says it's investigating allegations of racism in the stands after some of its high school students dressed up as cowboys during a basketball game against its rivals from Alaska's only Native reservation. KRBD's Eric Stone has the story.
Tensions flared after photos circulated of student fans dressed in Western wear in the stands at a varsity high school basketball game at Ketchikan High School on Saturday. Students in the school's pep club wore cowboy hats, cowboy boots, flannel shirts, and the like. India Hudson says she was at the game, and she has ties to both communities. She lives in Ketchikan, and her sons play for Ketchikan's junior varsity basketball team. But she's Tsimshian from Metlakatla and a member of Metlakatla's federally recognized tribe.
I'm related to a lot of the basketball players, and I think that they are also really awesome kids, too. So it was extremely hard for me to see what was going on.
She says she was taken aback by the pep club's attire.
When, like, the Juneau Douglas Bears play, they dress up as hunters, and it's kind of funny, you know? And I thought, are they trying to be like cowboys and Indians here?
The school district announced shortly after the game that it had launched an investigation into the incident. Ketchikan High School apologized on its Facebook page the next morning. Ketchikan's superintendent, Melissa Johnson, says as she understands it, the pep club had dressed up for a country theme night.
But then it looked like cowboy night, and so it looked like it was a cowboy versus Indian theme. And so the people from Metlakatla, rightfully so, felt like we were being culturally insensitive.
Johnson is Alaska Native herself and serves on Ketchikan Indian Communities Tribal Council. Metlakatla's superintendent, Ta Lindsay of the Annette Island School District, says he's been in touch with his counterpart in Ketchikan and is awaiting the outcome of the investigation.
It, to me, is definitely insensitive. It brings out, you know, some historical trauma on how Native people have been treated in the past. And it's concerning. You know, our students don't deserve that.
Ketchikan's school board president, Stephen Bradford, was at the game. He chalks up the insensitivity of the theme to carelessness rather than racism.
You know, the adults probably should have thought that through a little more carefully when the themes were announced, that it might be inappropriate for the Metlakatla game.
Hudson, the Metlakatla tribal member in Ketchikan, says it may not have been malicious, but even so,
no matter what the intent was, that was the message that came across, so. And I think that maybe they didn't think about the past, all of the past that is that cowboys and Indians entails to Native people. You know, that's not a good history that comes up when you say that to somebody Native, you know.
Ketchikan's superintendent says the investigation is still underway, but she says the school district has accepted some responsibility for the pep club's country and western theme.
That is a fault on the adult part, fault on our policies and procedures, which won't happen again, and that we will make sure that whatever theme that we choose is a culturally sensitive and appropriate. So moving on, we will definitely have a plan moving forward on what the kids will dress up like.
Anger is simmering among some parents from Metlakatla who attended Saturday's game.
Shame on them. Like, racism at its finest.
That's LaTanya Gallis, the mother of a Metlakatla Chiefs point guard. She insists the offensive conduct went beyond what the Ketchikan students were wearing.
Those kids were, like, literally barking and, like, making, like, weird noises when our kids were at the free throw line. Like, what is that?
But Ketchikan School Board President Stephen Bradford suggests another explanation for the rowdy K-High fans.
K-High Pep Club, I think, has been barking at the opponents shooting free throws for years, whether it's Petersburg or Juneau or anybody. So I didn't associate it with anything improper.
It's still unclear whether any racial slurs were voiced. That, Johnson says, is something the school district is trying to establish.
But I will find that out. And if we have situations where people were not using appropriate behavior, then we will take action on that.
India Hudson, the Tsimshian parent in Ketchikan, says she hopes this will be a teachable moment.
As a native, it is difficult to live in Ketchikan. A lot of times, I mean, every single member of my family has experienced racism here. You know, racial slurs, name-calling, that kind of thing. It's not something that we're making up in our heads.
Johnson says the investigation is expected to wrap up by the end of the week. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska's only public psychiatric hospital failed to meet federal requirements for evaluating patients and failed to investigate complaints about workplace harassment in 2020. That's according to a new report from the Alaska Ombudsman released this week. It's based on staff interviews and records. The investigation stemmed from an anonymous complaint about conditions at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. The report says the hospital did not provide active treatment to all patients or consistently create and update treatment plans. Most patients admitted in 2020 got what the report called, quote, cookie-cutter treatment plans of psychiatric nursing and medication. The State Department of Health and Social Services, which oversees the hospital, wrote in an emailed statement that the report looked at problems in 2020 and didn't account for progress it made over the last year. State Ombudsman Kate Burkhart said the health department has agreed to implement some of the recommendations she made. The department, however, also made similar assurances in 2019 in response to another investigation by the ombudsman that also found major problems.
We have made recommendations about that. In the past, the department has accepted some of those and committed to implement them. Turns out they weren't all implemented, so we re-recommended them.
The report says the hospital CEO, Scott York, provided inaccurate information to investigators in several instances. For example, York denied that he was aware of complaints about gender and racial harassment and bullying. But the ombudsman says York and others, including the deputy director of the health department, were aware of those complaints but didn't take, quote, meaningful action to fix them. Still, Burkhart says the report didn't find any evidence that staff had harmed patients, something it did find in its 2019 report. Burkhart says her office will continue to work with the hospital and health department to improve services. In other news, Exit Glacier has shrunk by more than 2,000 feet since 2004. That was also the last time that Kenai Fords National Park created a management plan for that part of the park. Park officials says a big draw of the glacier was that the visitors could walk right up and touch it. That's not possible anymore. Exit Glacier has been receding quickly. Parts of the park that were once prime for glacier viewing are no longer. To account for those changes, Kenai Fords National Park is updating its management plan for the area, and it's asking for input from the public on what it would like to see from a new park plan. Exit Glacier is just west of Seward. It's the most accessible part of the 1,000-square-mile Kenai Fjords National Park. The glacier is receding at an accelerating rate, and Park Service says it's no longer feasible to add in new trails to account for the shift like it's done in the past. Kenai Fjords is not the only national park that has had to adjust its management style to account for climate change. Last year, the National Park Service published a guide for parks to consider those forces and manage accordingly. From the KTOO Newsroom, this is Yvonne Kremery. For more stories like this, please visit our website at ktoo.org.